Good morning, everyone. It's Diane Mitchell Hamilton. I'm on the line, and today is the day that we're beginning our four-part series on an exploration of integral devotion. And just to let you know, we've had over 350 people sign up for the call, and there are probably over 100 who are actually live on the call today. So it's a big audience, and I'm really feel very privileged to be discussing this with you. And thank you, wherever you are in the world, for joining us this morning. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm a Zen teacher. I've also been part of this Integral Spirituality Project since 2004, when Ken Wilber brought many spiritual teachers together, and we started to explore together what it meant to be an integralist, so to speak. And also, just I'm concerned with what spiritual practice in this postmodern era. Real spiritual practices like, and how we can use the integral map to actually help us navigate and to start to create ways of practicing and being together and certain kinds of forms that will really hold us in this genuine inquiry of the heart, which I know for all of you on the call is probably really central to your life. So I'd like to introduce my good friend and fellow teacher. And you know, I consider Terry not just a teacher in the broadest sense of the word, but a teacher of mine. He's one of these people that I feel I can really reveal myself to and receive guidance from in moments when I really need it. And part of what we're doing within the Integral Project is trying to build relationships that are trustable and that we can walk through some of life's more difficult challenges with the people that we've cultivated. And Terry's certainly one of those for me. So those of you who are new to Terry, he's a very large figure within integral spirituality. He's a teacher. He was a practitioner of he was a devotee of Adida for many years, a yogi in his own right. He's the author of the Integral Life Practice book with Ken Wilber. And one of the things that I appreciate about Terry is that he really is very caring about the state of the world. You can never accuse Terry of a kind of spiritual bypass. And at the same time, you know, you can really plunge both spiritual conversation and also spiritual realization with Terry. And for me, that's the fact that he's both, as Christ liked to say, in the world but not of the world is really important. And I consider him to be actually one of the most devotional beings that I know personally, and that's really the reason for having him on the call, is that I want you to be exposed to, you know, what a just a kind of fabulous teacher he is and a devotional being. And that's what we're going to be exploring together. So before I turn it over to Terry, what I'd like to do is, if you'd be so kind to press one on your handheld, if you could kind of complete the sentence, the reason that I'm on the call today is we'd like to hear from you why you're interested in this topic of devotion, why you've tuned in to listen to Terry speak, and what's in your heart right this moment about devotion. So if you would just complete that sentence, the reason I'm on the call is, you know, 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, that would be great. So please press one on your handheld, and if I know you, I may have to just call on you spontaneously. So Mike Zimmerman's on the call. He happens to be my husband, so let's go to him first. Michael, your reason for being on the call is?
To broaden my awareness of others' practices of devotion so that maybe I can broaden my own experience of devotion.
Okay. All right. Beautiful. Thank you. And thanks for joining us. So Maurice Lepage is here from Quebec. Maurice, how about you? What's your reason for being on the call?
My reason for being on the call is answering to a longing I feel, a longing for something deeper, something connecting, something bigger, and going over some fears about what it means for me to be devoted to something bigger than me. So that's why I'm here today.
Okay. Beautiful. All right. So that word longing really kind of chimed for me when you said that, overcoming fear and feeling connected to something larger. Wonderful. So Rebecca Colwell, she's also in Canada. How about you, Rebecca, this morning? What's your purpose for being on the call this morning? It's to be nourished from this field of other devotional beings. Yeah, there's something that I like that word nourish. That's a beautiful word to presence, because there is something very deeply nourishing to me, I know, when I'm around devotional people. Beautiful, thank you. So James is on the call, and I don't know James's last name, but go ahead and tell us, what's your purpose for being here, James?
When I heard you ask that question, community came to my mind right away. Being an integralist, and my social life is not, they're just not familiar with Ken Wilber and all the work he does, and so I feel pretty much alone in community is really a big part of feeling others.
Great. You know, I'm really happy that you presenced that. One of the awkwardnesses and yet one of kind of the great satisfactions, I think, of this community is because it's kind of a burgeoning community. It doesn't really know who it is. It's busy asking itself, who are we? And then in certain moments it seems like we know, and then in the next moment we're doing it differently. It's very virtual. But I really do feel for myself, James, that the friendships and the practice that I've been able to do with people in this community over the last 10 or 12 years has really informed my life so much. So I'm hoping that those of you will feel some community, even though it's virtual. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And let's just take maybe two more. We have Corinne on the call. Go ahead, Corinne.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for putting this together. I've been thinking about devotion just in the back of my mind. And the image while you were all talking was of the kindling of a fire. And I think that's my inquiry. Like, how do I light that kind of fire to warm that experience of devotion to other? And in me, I started out thinking just in a very small personal sense of being devoted to another, serving another, in the broader context of what you're talking about.
Well, I love that notion of that we're bringing some passion and some fire in. I think that's a nice moment. There are many more people who have their hands up, and thank you for raising your hands, but I'm going to transition right now to turning it over to Terry. And one of the things that people will often say about Terry is that Terry has just a boatload of passion. So, you know, he carries that kind of fire, and I think for all of us is a model for how to really bring our heart, to let our heart be on fire. At this point, I want to turn it over to our good friend and teacher, Terry Patton.
Well, thank you so much, Di. Gosh, I feel very loved with all the nice things you said about me. I feel like I should spend some time saying even nicer things about you, but hopefully everybody already loves and appreciates you.
We should forego that.
Well, hi, everyone. I really love Rob and David McCallum and Sophia. Each of them is a devotee within a particular tradition. And in a way, I think my role here is to be the devotee who told his parents when he was 6 years old that he didn't believe in God. My orientation to spirituality is very much the, you know, and a lot of us have had, you know, we're rational people in this rational world. Even those of us who really are standing inside a tradition have had to grapple with the potential existential meaninglessness of a random universe. And our discovery of spirituality is on the other side of that crisis of meaninglessness, of maybe living in a dead universe in which we're alone, of maybe being radically separate, of having not always felt clear that wasn't the case, but maybe having dared to go through a certain fire of an existential crisis.
And for me, the original discoveries on the other side of that crisis were more about awareness. They were not immediately about devotion. They were about a deeper life, the beginnings of a transrational disposition. You know, instead of a pre-rational devotion or a merely rational, not so devotional or spiritual orientation, I began to wake up to the fact that rationality could not hold my whole experience. You know, Ken Wilber, back when he was writing the book Integral Spirituality, I think it was about 2007 or 8, began talking with some of us about what he was calling the 1-2-3 of God. The idea that there's a form of spirituality that is first person, that is the I am-ness, awareness behind awareness, going to the very source of awareness. And this is what most of us are steeped in through our meditation practice. And a third person spirituality, which has to do with contemplating it, contemplating the world, contemplating the nature of the patterns that connect things, contemplating nature and the beauty of nature as an object of attention. And through a deepening contemplation of it as an object of attention, coming into an uplifted, enhanced, transformed relationship to experience. And then second person spirituality, which is what we're talking about today, is like I, you, second person. That somehow there is a relationship between me and that unnameable thing. It's really important to appreciate that when we talk about the three faces of God, that was the name I gave to it that I think most people are using now, these three faces are all perspectives. You know, as humans, we take perspectives, and working freely with perspectives is a hallmark of integral spirituality, integral practice, integral philosophy. But what we're talking about is mysterious. It isn't captured by any perspective. It isn't captured by any language. When we use the word God, or even the word the mystery, I like the word the mystery better because it evokes kind of a open-endedness. I don't know what's there. A sense of a living relationship to something that deserves further open contemplation. So there's a fundamental and I think, you know, really philosophical orientation that perhaps all of us can share, that our spirituality is, number one, it's in relationship to something that is ultimately beyond our, like, no matter how enlightened we get, we're in relationship to a mystery that exceeds our experience. That is, we can continue to grow in our relationship to it forever. It is unlimited. It's infinitely deep. And whether you have a really rich and developed relationship to God and you feel you know God and that's all so real to you, or whether there's a sense that you're early on the path, or you're just very, very strongly empirical and you don't want to jump to any conclusions, and but that sense that, well, there is an infinitely deep mystery, perhaps, you know, that you can kind of hold that as a possibility rather than a belief. And for me, that's an important frame for engaging with devotion. It's just that relationship to, you know, what is God? What is the Beloved? In some sense, I will say, oh, I know God. I have this rich relationship to God. And my life is one in which I feel like that living relationship with the divine is the most important thing. Everything else is kind of an expression of that. And coming into a real, living, creative contact with that is... it's deepened all through my life, and it will deepen forever. And it's even, you know, like even before this call, I kind of opened my heart in a prayer to the unknowable pattern of existence to help me be of service to you, to help this be a real event, a useful gift that would touch your heart, that it would be authentic, that it wouldn't be me giving a rap, you doing something you'd done before, but a living moment when something real and new might arrive for you. So it's kind of how I navigate everything, is through this, it's my prayer not that I be the author of my teachings, but that the greater truth find a channel through me into expression. Now, that's how I'm living now, but I kind of went through a process of working with the inner atheist in me. I didn't want to engage my spirituality as in a pre-rational way, in a superstitious way, in a naive or childish way. For me, this spirituality is the most important thing in our lives, and we can't be kind of faking something unreal and have that really feed us in the most real ways. It has to actually be real, really real. And what was really real to me was at first, you know, the sense of God wasn't as apparent. The sense of the divine wasn't as, you know, real. Opening to devotion was like a proposition, something I was willing to consider, but not something that I had such a direct, tangible relationship to. And I think that's really because now, with a richer experience of it, the divine is that which is so close to us. You know, like that great line from Stuart Davis, closer than the water in my eye. You know, it is so pervasive, so unchanging. You know, how you don't notice the noise that the refrigerator was making until it turns off. It's kind of like that. It's just always everywhere. And it is you, and it is everything, and it is unknowable. It expresses itself. We have all kinds of, you know, sometimes we experience it as light or as love or as consciousness, awareness. We use words like suchness. We use words like the mystery. There's a brightness. We can call it the radiant transcendental consciousness. It's the aliveness, the quality of emergence, of creativity. You know, there are all kinds of words we can use. But each of them, if we fasten on them, will end up falling short. And so having that sense of our relationship to the divine being our relationship to something we just don't know. We don't know. I am in relationship to what I don't know. And my well-being depends utterly on all kinds of things that come from I don't know where. Like, if I get sick, I really want to get well, and I'm not sure where it comes from. Every day that I don't get a life-threatening disease, I don't know why I don't, but I'm glad I don't. I don't know why I get a new idea. I don't know why something authentic and real will come through me and be a gift to others. I don't know where my where you know the synchronicities, the meetings of people, the humor, you know, where that brightness that becomes the laughter that opens, you know, kind of overwhelms the knitted brow of the mind. I don't know where that comes from. And at a certain point, I realized that I was living in relationship to that in a way that took it for granted, as if this were a dead world in which everything was mechanical. And that's the habit energy. You know, we are social creatures, and we live in a culture that, for the most part, orients what we often call dualistic mind. I, separate over here, experiencing a world out there, this skin-encapsulated ego in a mostly pretty karmic, you know, mechanical cause and effect, predictable world. And to the degree that I orient that way, I feel alone. You know, I am living in a world in which, you know, I am separate from it, and I can have my private thoughts, not necessarily even be self-honest about the drives, the reactivity, the judgments, the anger, the fear that are very, very subtle that we can hide from. But as I open out of that dualistic orientation into a holistic one in which I begin to notice myself in a play, a leela, a dance of interiors and exteriors that are just constantly dancing, in which I'm not radically separate from what is around me, then the interiors of everything around me become real. And I begin to realize that my thoughts are not just my own, that they actually are a pebble in a pond. They're radiating out. There is an interiority to the world around me that's affecting me, that I'm in a living universe, and it's a whole different thing. And then this otherness, this mysterious other that I might pray to, is no longer an imaginary friend, a construct. You know, we've all inherited a relationship to devotion and prayer from the Judeo-Christian origins that were pretty dominant. Some of us in our childhoods, for some of us it was our parents, or maybe even our grandparents' childhoods. But it's a recent emergence, and the shadow of the way that mythic God that you prayed to as if God were a somebody, and you had an image of God almost like the, you know, the guy with the beard in the sky. And it was often an angry God, or a even if not angry, still there was a mythic construct, and there was sin, and there were all kinds of things that we had to liberate ourselves from. We have, most of us, arrived on the other side of the same thing I was describing, you know, this transition from pre-rational to rational to a trans-rational relationship to spirituality. And I think that our culture, our friends, the groups that are gathering spiritually, probably almost everyone on this call, are people who have arrived in that trans-rational orientation. And we've reclaimed the first person and the third person, and we really have a living relationship to them. And the second person spirituality, devotion, is the place where there are diamonds on the soles of our shoes. There's huge opportunity for profound, profound growth, profound enlivenment of our hearts, profound awakening of a living, dancing, prayerful and grace-filled and gratitude-filled and honest and juicy, alive relationship to this mysterious moment-by-moment unfolding of reality, which is always alive, infinitely alive, and which we tend to turn into something dead and predictable and boring and not full of possibility. So for me, this has become, to me, I think it is central that feeling, which is what we engage with devotion, all the parts of us that are relational, you know, are a very important part of our spirituality. We are social creatures who are built to relate. Our neurology is like we're pack animals, you know. We can notice so much from just slight changes in the muscle tension on a human face, you know. So because we're relational creatures, it's such an enrichment of our spirituality to have a relational spirituality, a devotional spirituality. And you know, if our spirituality is only first person and third person, it doesn't engage so many of our functions. So much of us comes online, and our hearts and our feeling life are where we tend to be shocked. We tend to be numbed. We tend to be a little shut down. We tend to be a little fixated in the mind in a certain range of emotion and certain aspects of physical sensory experience. So to liberate it out into feeling is really the biggest expansion. And one of the things that I've found, a huge thing, that has been a great practice, it's what I want to share with everyone later when we do the groups, is a practice of prayer that is truly transrational. Not the saying of a prayer we already know, not the addressing of a divine being we have a picture of, but a speaking into the mystery, spontaneous, in the moment, alive, where we open our throat and give ourselves a chance to give voice to our relationship to this mystery, you know, in whatever way is authentic. So, I think I've done enough talking about it. I'd like to offer a prayer right now. And after I've finished expressing that prayer, I'll say a few more words and we can transition. So, you know, sitting here right now, as I imagine beginning to go into prayer, I'm imagining all of you. I'm sitting in my chair. I'm relaxing and I'm opening and I'm feeling this, you know, aliveness, this kind of iridescent dancing and utterly still awareness, which is the source of all benefit. And I'm noticing that whatever it is that's alive, that speaks through me, that actually is the spark behind my intelligence and awareness, is also that which is recognizing whatever is real here in your awareness. And I'm feeling this symphony of mutuality, this psychophysical, mysterious world, which is paradoxically both identical to the divine, not separate from the divine, and we seem separate and we're in play. All those perspectives are true at the same time. And then I'm turning to that unknowable source of grace, you. You who are beating my heart and who are being that spark of intelligence that is in every heart, that is feelingly listening and sympathetically resonating in each moment of this speech. You who have been here since before, you who are my original face, you who are looking, gazing back into my eyes from a place beyond my death and before my birth, you who I cannot deceive, and yet you who somehow embrace and forgive me, even though I so often live as if you don't exist, oblivious to you. Thank you. Thank you for every moment of this amazing incarnate conscious existence. Thank you so much. Thank you for the fact that I keep learning and growing. Thank you for the challenges that grow me. Thank you for the strength or clarity or courage that can come forward. Please give me more. Yes, I'm willing. I'm willing to do my best to get out of the way of you, to rediscover myself as you. Thank you for those moments in which we have been not to. Please, may that deepen and grow. Please help me awaken further. Help this heart learn all the ordinary lessons of forgiving and opening to and taking care of myself and coming rich in enjoyment and finding a certain kind of basic peace, and out of that, sincere appreciation and care and gratitude. Thank you for the moments in which that blossoms fuller in generosity and courage and real creativity. Please help me find those qualities in each new moment. Help me be here now. Help every one of us, please, be here now in a way that keeps renewing moment after moment in real, embodied feeling, incarnation of all of these most refined and healthy and beautiful qualities. Help us find our way through our doubt, boredom, discomfort, and our patterns of contraction into a process of moment-to-moment rediscovery of the reality of you. Thank you. Thank you so much. So thank you all for being with me in that. I felt a field of resonance and deepening intimacy as that all went on, and I'm appreciating that a lot. So I've said what I needed to say as a part of this, you know, talk. I think I've introduced my way of being related to devotion. I'd like to invite you to share the questions or the resonances. You know, please, if you'd raise your hand by pressing 1 on your key set, perhaps we can begin to have a conversation about our living relationship to devotion. You don't need to have a intelligent, question or a ecstatic confession. But I think
I have a question, if I could.
Yeah.
Well, people are raising their hands. I think one of the challenges that you spoke to is that if we view our spiritual development in the context of evolution, that things are changing. And so a lot of us on the call, you know, have moved out of the religion of our childhood, and we've gone through periods of, you know, real kind of scientific and materialistic inquiry and accomplishment, and we've, you know, everybody on the call has been to a yoga class, and most of us have sat in a sweat lodge, and many of us have, you know, engaged in prayer. But a lot of us don't have the forms that come from the traditions anymore. Like, they were too tight, or they were, you know, there was too much hypocrisy, or there wasn't enough room for us to ask real questions, whatever. So I guess the question I'm interested in hearing you speak to is, how does somebody who has a real clear connection in their heart but lacks the forms that the traditions offer in terms of practice, what advice would you give to them? I'm curious about that.
Thank you, Di. Yeah. Well, for me, I bring prayer into my morning practice, you know, before I sit. I take a moment to actually engage something like what I just did in an interior way. You know, just saying, you know, and it's quite a big thing to turn to the divine and address this unknowableness in second person, to say, mm-hmm. you, to turn to grace, mm-hmm. and feel a connection intimately. It's a really profound practice. It is a form. It's a very universal, very basic form. I think it's an inherent
mm-hmm.
form.
Mm-hmm.
But it is authentic. And if that begins to feel real to you, you can begin to bring it into other moments of the day. I certainly do. So the form of my second person practice is just a growing awareness that everything I see and everyone, you know, even my relationship to myself, are a field for potentially being in love and living as love and growing in
mm-hmm.
that capacity. And it's something I take really seriously, you know, humorously seriously. But, you know, I'm very sincere about it, and I have found that it really does grow powerfully. And it's trustable. And I think that there can be additional forms that are a little bit more formal and might relate to a tradition that might be important and might work very well for many people. And I don't mean to discourage them, but I think a part of every one of us is secular. A part of every one of us is simply rational. And so having a relationship to something inherent that isn't derived from a tradition can be really valuable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so prayer itself, the form of prayer, of addressing the mystery or grace or the great unknown, but from a real position of supplication and surrender with a real question and a real request for guidance, and that itself is the form.
Right. It usually begins with gratitude, though. It begins with the thanks, and then it moves
mm-hmm.
into an open willingness, and out of that, then I think... see, some people say don't do any petitionary prayer, And I don't agree with that. I think, you know, don't ask for a Cadillac. Yeah, don't ask to pass the test. Don't ask for, you know, winning the lottery. But do ask for, you want the Cadillac. Ask for the clarity. Ask for the humility. Ask for the, you know, courage. Ask for the resilience. You know, those things are so good and so healthy to request.
Okay, great. It looks like Alan has a question. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yes, Terry, I've noticed in my experience that beauty is something that maybe that's still first person, but that I then finally, when I celebrate beauty in my life and in all its forms, that is a path to also the gratitude and all the other things you've addressed and you've mentioned and was very touched by. So could you say a few words about that? Is that something that is, and it's a pervasive beauty, that the thing that you find everywhere and that you are grateful for. So could you say a few words maybe about that?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing it up. You know, one of the ways that I often teach about this is to, isn't it amazing that something is sort of inherent in every one of us that recognizes beauty? Mm-hmm. You know, like we all can look at the same sunset and say, wow, it's beautiful. We can look at the same, we can listen to the same piece of music. We can, you know, beauty, there's like something hardwired in the human psyche, and maybe it's more than human. Maybe animals recognize beauty just as much as we do. There's something hardwired in us that recognizes it. So that means there's something beautiful about us. It means, in a way, that beauty is one of the footprints of divinity. One of the integral philosophers, Steve McIntosh, you know, harkens back to the Greek trinity of beauty, truth, and goodness as the fundamental expressions of virtue and of the qualities of the divine. I think there's another one I love to add, which is, you know, love, freedom, and joy, which are the more subjective, you know, kind of aspects of it. And sometime I'm going to come up with a third, because it would be much more poetic to have three of these trinities. But that particular one, beauty, has a special simplicity, because somehow, you know, the world is inherently beautiful, and there is beauty on every scale. There's even beauty in ugliness, and that, and the fact that we recognize it and that it sort of is resurgent, and that there's a kind of inherent tendency in being toward, you know, that attraction to beauty. It's just another one of the, like, traces of the divine. Like, my rational self thinks of the way that they proved the Big Bang through the background radiation of the original explosion somehow being the demonstration of the Big Bang. And it's like there's this ancient primordial trace of the divine just in beauty itself. Mm. It's beautiful. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Terry.
Roxanne has a question. Go ahead, Roxanne.
Listening to this is, wow. I in one of my meditations once, I had experienced the vastness, and it was dark, and there was a breath there, I can't make the sound. But I was there maybe 1 second, maybe two, and I got out very quickly because I thought my body would explode. And I have discovered and found out that there is a sacred place in my heart that holds this vastness. And listening to your prayer, Terry, is I'm becoming very aware, like self-knowledge, And the closer I get to myself, the more I'm aware of the energies that you were talking about in your prayer, and getting in contact with that. It's the trust. It's huge for me. And thank goodness it happens in baby steps, because if it happened quickly, it would just explode me somehow.
I was just appreciating the awesome power and vastness of that divine intuition and how overwhelming it can feel when one really gets that revelation, that profound epiphany. And I was just resonating with you.
Wow, yeah, good. It's there's really, I haven't really talked to anybody about this because it's just so, I know it's very real. And I know that I was at something last night and someone said to me, right as soon as I sat down, there was an energy standing behind me. And I believe that and I know that, and I do say to the energies, okay, you know, one little step, and there's signs everywhere. And things that are happening, that's okay. Wow. It's really so listening to you is very helpful for me to grab onto something that my mind knows, because I know the mind does not know anything about profound trust. I know that. So experiencing and listening to your prayer was like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling expanded into that direct experiential contact, Roxanne. Thanks for sharing with us. That's beautiful.
So we have time for one more question before we transition.
I would love to take a question from Sensei Michael Zimmerman.
I'm sitting down in Torrey looking out at the rain clouds coming across the mountains and the trees and all of that. I'm noticing the tendency. As I said to Diane earlier, one of the things that I'm interested in is trying to relate more broadly to devotion as others may experience it. And I notice the listening to your words, trying to have them be congruent with what I'm experiencing with my eyes. And it's an interesting experience because I get an awful lot of emotional and spiritual energy out of simply observing, simply watching nature. And listening to your talk, I'm trying to feel into what's occurring for me internally in my relationship to what is maybe a first person, first and a third person deity experience. And trying to feel it as a second person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm finding it interesting to sort of do my own natural spiritual practice, which isn't my Buddhist practice particularly, while listening to you doing your spiritual practice. The question would be, the observation is that in doing this, noticing the way in which my habitual automatic spiritual practice at times resists being turned into having its perspective shifted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that we, which is speaking for myself, it feels as though there's a way that we become habituated in our connection with the source, with that which is us, but which we are not it. We become habituated in that just as we become habituated in all the other things in our life and resist being stretched.
Right. And yet pushing the other way would only reinforce that tendency. So the opportunity is what you're doing, which is to just kind of relax into the inquiry, the open inquiry, and be willing to allow the patterns that structure your habitual attention to hold them so lightly that that a larger field is possible, and that is what can open into authentic devotion, not a pre-rational approach, but a truly trans-rational experience. So Mike, the other thing I would just say to you is, your worldview would say that the experience of your separateness is illusory, fundamentally, even though it has a certain conventional reality. Well, just as real as is your separateness or mine is the reality of the other and the deep multidimensionality. And since every perspective is both true and partial, and this devotional perspective is, at least to me, rationally, seems like it is, a third of the spiritual universe along with the first person and third person dimensions, that inquiry and opening and kind of like, well, let's see if I can try it on for size, is like it's an experiment worth doing. Even my inner skeptic is willing to gather data. And that inquiry is just on the table in this moment of this call. And that's the place where I think, we have clarity and common ground, perhaps.
Yeah, and free and simply listening and participating in this call is an effort by each of us to unmoor ourselves from our own attachment to the bliss point, to the place we habitually go to experience the universe, but subtly remain attached to a preference.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael. I'd like to give Terry a chance just to tell us how those of you on the call that would like to connect to him and connect to his work can do that. So go ahead, Terry.
My website is just myname.com, terrypatton.com. And there, if you scroll down just a little ways, there's a place where you can sign up for my newsletter and the free download of a meditation on the three faces of God, which kind of takes what we did here and elaborates it in a pretty rich way. There's also a free course that I've just created on how to befriend your overstimulated brain, kind of dealing with the incredible pace of life and the distraction pattern that we have. And that's at freecourse.terrypatton.com. So you're invited to go to either or both of those places if you want to connect with me. I welcome you. Now, what I want to invite you to do is to engage in this as a practice and to actually do some transrational prayer. And you may remember I said that this is not like learned prayer. It's not repeating something you've heard before. It's actually entering into the moment and turning to the mystery and speaking to the mystery. And that's the quality of sacredness, the quality of infinite depth, the quality of grace, wonder. So it's really a very intimate thing to do, especially in front of strangers. And some of us haven't done this before at all. Some of us may feel very comfortable with it. But the thing that makes it a really rich practice is to find a way to do it from the heart. And a big part of this is to listen and be present with each other in a way that is sort of rooting for each other, really friendly to this experiment, interested for it to be as rich and full and true as it can possibly be. So we'll give you just about 90 seconds, very short amount of time, to just find your way into it and just go with it and just, you know, kind of try it on for size and do it with as much sincerity as you can, but let yourself go into it in the sense of, you know, fake it till you make it, not in the sense of insincerity, but in the sense of just going for it and not letting your doubts get in the way. And so you just pray for a couple of minutes, and then we'll ring the bell again, and then you'll have like 90 seconds for the two who were not praying to just offer any sincere words of appreciation that you have for the prayer that you heard. And then the bell will ring again, and one of us will announce that it's person number two's turn, and we'll repeat the process, and we'll do that three times. And then we'll give you a little time to just share among yourselves about that experience. Please begin. So I want to give all of you a chance now just to chat in an unstructured way and feel into what you've touched into, what you've learned, what questions come out of the experience, what comes alive in the experience. So please go ahead. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much. And thank you, Dai, for this opportunity to share that practice. If people have anything that they'd be willing to share, just so that we all kind of come together as a large group, I'd be grateful. I think that the whole group experience is enriched when we all hear a few things about what emerged in this practice. It's quite a tender and sometimes difficult practice for some of us. So it'll be a service to others if you share your way of relating to it. Catherine, welcome.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the chance to talk. Well, I have kind of a unique way that I came to the call today, is that on April 1st, 2013, I had a religious experience, and I went psychotic. And I basically blew into eternal time, and I couldn't necessarily find my way back. And you all brought me back. And if you know what devotion means, try being on the other side of it, trying to find your way home. And thank God Thomas Hubel talked me back down so that I could connect the vibration of eternal time with temporal time and get back to living in my family and having them understand my words and not think I've gone crazy, not think I'm insane. Feel the love, feel the care, and be back on the planet, for God's sake. It was beautiful out there, but you know, what brought me back were the millions of people praying and caring and loving. And you could feel everyone, every Muslim, every Buddhist, every Christian, every pagan. It didn't matter. Anybody that opened their heart to divine love in whatever tradition, at whatever moment in time, came on like a full-blown chorus. God, it's good to be home. Thank you all.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing that. Wow, that sounds like an intense journey that you've been on. Thanks for sharing.
Yes, it was very intense.
So vulnerably. Mark, hi.
Hi. I've been going to a centering prayer group for the last few years because it was the best practice group I could find in Knoxville, and I'd grown up more of a Buddhist orientation and then found Integral And it was a challenge for me to have that one-on-one relationship with God. And so this has been a really nice reinforcement for that, because I've lost my centering prayer groups, and so now I'm back to Buddhism. And these occasional visits with Spirit in the second person is nice. And a lot of these second person groups, it's like there's two kinds of Spirit in the second. There's the person to person, and then there's the person to God. And I think that's something that would be good to be paid a little more attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an important point. Great to hear your voice, Mark. Thanks for joining us. That's terrific.
Yeah, Terry, thank you so much. I mean, the opportunity, as Mark was just saying, to actually experience this space that's kind of beyond the traditions, where we can move freely between, as Michael was pointing out, our own interior first-person recognition of Spirit in the second-person devotional relational space, and then that kind of third-person being in awe of that which isn't us. So thanks, everybody, for taking time to be on the call. And Terry, thank you so much for just, you know, inviting us into your practice and for being here. I know next week is the Integral Theory Conference, so if you're going to be there with Terry, I hope everybody enjoys themselves, and for those of you who are going to be on the call with us next week. So we're actually going to be looking at a Buddhist approach to devotion, and we'll be able to talk about kind of the role of devotion in a non-theistic practice like Zen. And so we look forward to being with everybody. So go ahead and open up the mics. Thank you again, Terry, so much. Bye, everybody. Have an awesome day.
Thank you,
Di.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.